Over NBC's Coast to Coast network of independent and affiliated stations, the University of Chicago Roundtable. We present Herman Feiner of the Department of Political Science of the University of Chicago. Mr. Feiner.
Two long and very hard years have passed in the unsuccessful attempt made by the United Nations to control the dreadful mass killer, the atom bomb. But thank heavens, when the situation seemed utterly desperate, with the United Nations proposing to throw in the sponge and even stop talking about the subject, it decided last Thursday to go on talking. While there's life, there's hope. What is there to talk about? The Soviet government has proposed a simultaneous destruction of America's stocks of bombs with the establishment of an international control authority. Is there anything in it, or is it just another mirage? Can we solve the problems that couldn't so far be solved? Are we fooling ourselves? How pressing is a solution? Is there anything left to talk about? What issues have kept the parties apart so far? Shall we ever be able to enjoy the fruits of productive atomic energy? Joining me in this roundtable discussion of atomic energy and the United Nations are David Cavers of the Law School of Harvard University and Thorfinn Hoeganes, atomic scientist of the University of Chicago. Hoeganes, why do we need to make a renewed, immediate, and great effort to solve this problem?
Because we are drifting on toward war. Most certainly we are. We have reasons to worry. The American people have reason to worry. The people of the world have reasons to worry. A great number of people still believe that the atom bomb is just another bomb. It is far more than just another bomb. Since the discovery of gunpowder some 6 or 7 centuries ago up to World War I, we increased the efficiency of explosives some 2 or 3-fold. And in the interim between World War I and World War II, we increased the efficiency of explosives 50%. The atom bomb increased the efficiency of our explosives not 2-fold, not 10-fold, not 100-fold, but 17 million-fold.
My God.
Anybody who says that the atom bomb is just another bomb is plainly insane. We have certainly cause for worry. And with this bomb, together with a surprise attack, we could have our cities wiped out in 15 minutes.
What a prospect. Cavers, after 2 years of failure in negotiation, is there anything left that we might attempt?
So certainly the Western powers on the UN Atomic Energy Commission have every reason for discouragement. Still, I believe the General Assembly's refusal to suspend the commission may prove to have been a wise move. In its 2 years of work, the UN Commission concentrated on the technological problems of international control. Since they could not agree on the principles of a technically sound plan, they never got around to considering how even the majority plan could be put into actual operation. Consequently, there are some tough questions that the Commission has yet to consider on a brass tacks basis. Having to face up to these questions should lead to more realistic thinking about atomic energy control on both sides of the Iron Curtain. I hope the Commission will give real consideration to a much less dangerous plan that we and the UN majority now propose, the plan for a moratorium on atomic fuel and power is, as you know, a plan that I have advocated, but it was first suggested by several U.S. atomic scientists back in 1945 or early 46. I hope we can discuss the moratorium plan here.
Well, I hope so, but this is the broad situation. The Russians don't feel safe, they won't feel safe, till we first destroy our stocks of bombs. On the other hand, America and her friends can't be left out of the account, will not destroy the bombs until they are reassured by a thorough and continuous international control. Have we reached an impasse? What do you think about it, Cavers?
The American proposal seems to me to contain the essentials of a sound control plan, but it presents difficulties which are very real. It would require that the control agency own and manage all dangerous facilities for producing and using atomic fuels which are capable of use in atomic bombs. The principle governing the location of these producing plants is the principle of strategic balance. If the United States is to have a big plant, this must be balanced by a big plant in Russia. The staffs would be international, Americans in Russian plants, Russians in American plants. All raw materials after extraction and all atomic fuels would be owned by the commission.
Well, isn't one of the great issues the question of the continuous inspection by the International Control Authority over the plant in different countries?
One of the biggest controversial issues is this inspection plant. This was considered long before Hiroshima and Nagasaki by scientists who were in the know at that time. Was man going to be able to prevent his own destruction? Well, after our experience with Hitler and his regime, we had no faith in man. Now, a very great dilemma presents itself in the control of atomic energy, because the materials which are used for the bomb are also used for power production and for the beneficial purposes. Now, with a world government, like our own government, with its constituent states, the problem would be easy. But with the various sovereign nations, this is going to be very difficult.
So the point about inspection depends on the inseparability of the destructive and the productive uses of the same plant and the same basic material.
That is what the difficulty is about. Now, we first evolved a plan in which we assumed that each country was to own its own resources for making nuclear fuels. And we hit upon a scheme of inspection for the production of fissionable materials and to prevent any dictator or any unscrupulous country from making atomic explosives surreptitiously while in the power business. We concluded that inspection alone wasn't enough. To keep a close check on the production of fissionable materials, it would require hundreds of inspectors.
When you say hundreds, you mean hundreds or you mean thousands?
Well, it depends upon the magnitude of the power operations. We would have to have inspectors in all of the plants to see that diversion was not undertaken. And this means that we would have to have chemical inspectors analyzing, seeing what materials go into the plant, what materials come out. But besides that, we would also have to have inspectors who rove around the country to see to it that there are not small plants or plants which we know nothing about or which the world knows nothing about. Now, another question is, how could we find the personnel of scientists, sufficient number of scientists, to carry out this inspection? It would take just hundreds and perhaps thousands of them. And I can't imagine scientists wanting to go into the steppes of Siberia to manage or to control a plant there, nor into the tundras of Alaska, where the plants would probably be operated. We weren't satisfied, therefore, with inspection alone. That was impossible. So we concluded that it would be absolutely necessary to have a world authority to own and manage these plants, and by so doing, of course, the inspection problem became a minimum.
Yes. Is that all that you want to say on the inspection point at the moment? Yeah.
This is really the technical basis for the United Nations Majority Report.
As I see it, atomic energy control has to deal with three dangers. The first is the danger of diversion, which you have just described. The risk that atomic materials or fuel will be smuggled out of the plants and used for atomic bombs. Second, however, is the danger of seizure. The risk that an aggressor power will seize the plants within its own boundaries while its nationals sabotage the plants in other nations. And there's the third danger, the danger of secret operations, the risk of atomic explosives will be produced secretly without the knowledge of the control agency. The kind of managerial control which you described, Dr. Hoeganus, and which is embodied in the American UN plan, will minimize the danger of diversion. It will do little, however, to prevent the danger of seizure, which I think is the worst of all. Finally, it is not designed to meet the danger of secret operations, which, of course, calls, as you noted, for a policing type of inspection. Now, in contrast, The atomic power moratorium plan virtually eliminates the first two dangers.
Yeah, what is that? When you say the atomic power moratorium plan?
This is a plan which seems advantageous so long as the nations of the world remain in a state of tension and acute distrust. It is based on two simple but crucial facts. Plants to produce the atomic materials needed for scientific and industrial research and for medicine are small, and neither the plants nor their products have military value. In contrast, plants to produce nuclear fuel for atomic power are very large, and both the plants and their products have great military value. At the present stage of science, a plant producing nuclear fuel for power is simply a huge atomic munitions plant. Since in any case it may be 10 or 20 or more years before we can have atomic power on an important commercial scale, why not take advantage of that fact and forbid the dangerous atomic fuel plants everywhere in the world? We could still enjoy the great benefits of atomic energy in scientific and medical work. Developmental work on atomic power could go forward on a limited scale. If, say, 15 years from now, world tensions had relaxed and the problems of atomic power production had been solved, the treaty could be revised to permit the construction of atomic fuel and power plants on whatever scale seemed both economical and safe.
Yes, well, there are various important problems that arise out of that. I think it ought to be understood that this very definitely means putting off the hopes of mankind for the productive use of power for a long time. We say 20 years from now, till the eventuation of such a use of power. But of course, wherever you start, it's got to take 20 years from wherever you start.
Of course, most scientists say that it isn't the power which is going to give us the beneficial effects, but rather the use of isotopes. And, well, in medicine, study medicine and pure science. We have hopes in the study of growth and hopes for the cure of cancer. That comes from the isotopes and not from the power consideration.
Therefore, the power moratorium plan would not interfere with that very important benefit to mankind.
No, not at all.
Well, now, thinking over it, I think there's a more basic problem. The question is this sinister possibility. Perhaps no agreement of any kind on atomic energy will come at any time because of the terror that grips all statesmen in the world, the unknown terror, of the know-how having come into the world. Okay. It always seems to me that once you've got this knowledge in the world, you can never purge the fear of it out of mankind's mind.
I was going to offer two objections to this. One was it does not eliminate the inspection. The Russians have been unwilling to have the kind of inspection which we want. They must have that. Even with your plan, it just means fewer inspectors. But will they object to 100 inspectors rather than 1,000 inspectors? I don't think it'll make much difference. Then you have the question, as you say, finer, the know-how. Are the Russians going to be satisfied that we have the know-how and they do not have the know-how? There is a parallel, you know, in scientific work.
Yes.
A scientist who reads another man's paper and doesn't quite, and it's very important to him, would like to repeat that experiment.
Yeah.
And so the Russians will like to repeat the experiment. And
yes,
so they won't be satisfied until they have built a plant which is as large as our plant, or not as large, or large enough so that they have the know-how.
Yes, once you left the genie out of the bottle, you can't get him back again.
That's right. And I can't imagine that the United States Senate would sign any kind of a treaty which would send our engineers and scientists over to build plants for the Russians.
Dr. Hoagland, you put your finger there on a point that we should consider in connection with the American proposal now before the UN, because under that proposal, the International Commission, to which we would be a party, not only would authorize the sending of engineers to Russia, but would authorize the construction of plants in Russia, would assist the Russians in the construction of those plants, and would also admit Russians to the management of the plants in this country. I doubt that the Senate, given the present relationships between Russia and this country, I would be willing to ratify even the plan which this nation has been proposing in the UN. Now, the power moratorium plan, I think, may eliminate some of those difficulties of agreement.
Yes, I think it does, but I don't think that we ought to close our eyes to the force of the arguments put at first by Gromyko more recently by Vyshinsky, which boiled down to this. We are not having anyone in our country who may spy out our economic situation. They talk in terms of the United Nations Atomic Energy Control Commission being an international trust, owning this, sending their spies into the country and the rest. They seem to be adamant and absolute about it. Is that a fact?
They have objected violently to the ownership and management of atomic facilities in Russia by the control agency. The power moratorium plan would eliminate that. If, however, they are adamantly opposed to allowing inspectors to investigate secret operations in their country, then I think no control plan is possible. In other words, we must assume at least adequate inspection against secret activities.
Well, coming back to this question of the know-how, I just don't believe that the Senate today would give the Russians the know-how.
Well, look at Groves' statement the other day. We cannot enter into any international agreement whereby we destroy our most powerful weapon until we are convinced of the good intentions of all the major powers. When can you ever achieve that conviction?
Well, now, that seems an impossibility, of course. We have to have some faith.
Part of the way to achieve international good faith, I suppose, is to enter into such agreements, provided they contain appropriate safeguards.
Which once again brings you down to the problem of a regular, continuous inspectorial control, whether it's maximalist in scope or minimal in scope. And what occurs to me is that if this happened, and it must be in the Russian minds, it would be the first time ever in the history of international relations that anything like a real executive inspection was started. The narcotics control, the Red Cross control, is nothing. The inspection, I mean, the importance of the subject of narcotics control is nowhere near the importance of the control of atomic energy. And that was very difficult to achieve.
And that is the minimum that we will accept. We will have to have a control.
Yes.
An inspection control.
Well, I wonder whether we can't explore something else that's been going round my mind for a couple of weeks. Can we make a bargain which will extinguish some of the lack of confidence on Russia's part in relationship to us and our want of confidence in them? Could we throw into the scales the destruction of the stocks of bombs, the destruction of the plant against countervailing concessions by the Soviet?
What do you think of the whole problem on one table at one time?
Yes.
The atomic bomb considerations, the control of atomic bomb, and the German, European, Asiatic considerations.
Yeah. The weapon that in the last resort would be used as the way to solve your problems, and the problems that in the last resort might be solved by your atomic energy control. They're the two sides of the problem, and perhaps they all ought to be thrown on the table together. I don't mind if you can bear with me for a second putting up a trial balloon. Supposing I do, I won't commit myself to it, but just for the sake of discussion. The United States and her friends would agree to destroy the stocks of bombs, destroy the their atomic plant, institute the Baruch plan with Kaver's amendment, which would mean the abolition of the veto and the establishment of full inspection and ownership.
You mean the Russians would move their armies back to their frontier?
Well, I would ask a big price for so generous a concession as that. No conqueror in history, and nobody ever, with that amount of power in the hands which the United States has now, has voluntarily made a gift of it to the rest of the world and agreed to submit himself to the same inspection as he asks of his opponents.
Don't you think this would depend entirely upon why the Russians are moving westward? Are they doing it because of their own security? Are they afraid of another war, creating a buffer state? Or does security to them mean something more than that, meaning the indoctrination of the communism throughout the world? Do they feel secure only under those considerations?
Well, I think that question is so mixed that the very nature of its being mixed is the one that gives our anxiety. If we could answer that they are missionaries, we'd have one policy. If we could answer that they are merely defensive, there's another policy. It is, and the trouble of our times is that on such a sensitive judgment of that kind as to their intentions, the whole peace of the world depends.
Well, then suppose they accepted this and they moved their armies back to their borders.
Well?
Then suppose we destroyed our factories and our bombs. What assurance would we have that they would move west again?
No, you wouldn't have a final assurance. They just have to move. They would just have been pushed back about 700 miles and could come forward again.
Well, you mean we would still have the know-how. We would not give that to them until they had really showed their good intentions.
The know-how is a question of time stages.
Is it your idea, Dr. Finer, that although we would be willing at the start, in return for the withdrawal of their armies, to demolish our bombs and our plants, we would not reveal the secrets of atomic bomb construction to the Russians unless and until a satisfactory control plan had been put in operation?
Yes, I'd want the control plan for sure. But in addition, I want these concessions from the Soviet.
That would be in return for the initial destruction of the bombs.
Yes, the difference between...
If they are worried about the fact that we have the bomb right now and that that bomb really puts them in a position of negotiating on all questions under duress because we might use it, though I don't think we would, we're tied with ethical shackles, then in return for that, I want something from them. And this is what it would be. International control in the only feasible long-run way. We've talked in those terms. Second, any Soviet know-how that they may get in the future comes to us too, because it's being pooled in the international arrangement. Thirdly, the retirement of the Soviet to their own pre-war frontiers. What are they doing outside them? Which means, I think, that all of us would have to go out of Germany, which means, of course, that you'd have to make an arrangement about the future of Germany. The cessation in law and fact of the Soviet's connection with fifth columns everywhere, Europe and the Far East, a complete open door for all over Europe. Our Marshall Plan to be unhindered. Russia can come into it if she wants to. The European Economic Commission of the United Nations to operate. And if the Soviet wants to work out pacts integrating the economies of the rest with her own, all right, so long as we can come in and make treaties, economic treaties, with Poland or Romania or Bulgaria.
Well, the essential difference between this plan and the Baruch Plan is that we destroy our bombs immediately in return for a concession on Russia's part. Otherwise, with this other amendment for no power production for 20 years...
Yes.
Then it is essentially the Baruch Plan, isn't it?
It's essentially the... Yes, it's essentially the Baruch Plan with the addition of the immediate destruction of stocks for a quid pro quo,
yes,
such as I've
yes.
just put down.
Dr. Finer, it seems to me that you have opened up in your suggestions for an exchange, a great many very difficult and delicate international issues. I, for one, wouldn't have a judgment as to what would be a fair, sound bargain of the sort that you prescribe. Frankly, I worry a little as I hear you recite some of the concessions which we would be expected to make. On the other hand, what you have said does open up a very important consideration from the standpoint of atomic energy control. If the working out of a satisfactory plan of control can be tied to a general settlement of the issues between the West and the communist bloc, it seems to me the likelihood of a satisfactory compromise is very considerably enhanced. It will render it more acceptable. So I think as a trial balloon, something to explore, we have a very useful
from
thought.
From the experience of our last 2 years, certainly something must be done.
Well, yes. And from the Soviet point of view, this would have, of course, I'm now in the heat of my enthusiasm about having made a constructive proposal. I ought to be a little more careful over that. But from her point of view, if she really is insistent and enthusiastic about making socialism in a single country, this would quieten her fears about having to divert her own productive resources for weapons and the rest, and give some breathing space between a quarrel and a blow. That's about the best I think you can get to under present circumstances. Do you see any snags in all this?
Well, except that I think that it might be very difficult to put this across to even the Russian people or to the American people.
Yes, I think that from the standpoint of the Russian people, there's no question that it could be put across.
Oh, yes, if you could convince 14 men. But not so in the United States.
We have, it seems to me, no easy solutions in this field of atomic energy control. But it does seem to me that what we have examined thus far corroborates what we stated at the start, namely that the opening up of the subject anew for fresh discussion in the United Nations Atomic Energy Commission may lead to positive and beneficial results.
What has shocked me very much is the phases of public opinion in this democratic country. And so in all the democratic countries, we can't talk of phases of public opinion elsewhere. Namely, first, great terror, then apathy, then Comic Songs on the radio, and then again, great apathy. And the thing seems to be forgotten.
Well, of course, the opinion prevails that all we have to do is keep the secret. And I think that people who preach that are really, you might say, traitors to our national security. This Thomas Committee, for example, is going after our Reds, our scientists. By implication, they are saying that all we have to do is keep the secrets away from Russia and everything will be well.
You think inevitably the Russians will gain the secret?
Oh, of course they can. It's just a question of time. It took us 3 years. It may take the Russians a few more years than that, but certainly they will get it.
Well, I think that just reflecting on all this, what ought we to say? I suppose that we acknowledge Mr. Stimson's dictum that the face of war is the face of death, but equally that the energy of the atom might give abundant life to all men. Holmes has talked about the power of the bomb, and he's really underlined the great dangers. I think we're all attracted by this suggestion of Cavers for the limitation of the exploitation of power. We're entitled to think that if we could secure the control of atomic energy, we should have contributed to solving the world's crisis of confidence, its anxiety that seems to be leading it to a war that no one rationally wants. It might even be that the atomic energy control would be a precursor and a model for other segments of a just and peaceful order in international politics. We not even have the chance of talking today about germ warfare, which is on the horizon. If the crisis of confidence were overcome in Europe and the Far East, the atom bomb troubles would be solved. A solution requires that both blades of the pair of international scissors, atom bomb on the one side and the bunch of specific problems on the other, move into alignment simultaneously. Everything has to be thrown onto the peace table at once.
Thank you, gentlemen. You've been listening to the University of Chicago Roundtable discuss atomic energy and the United Nations with David Cavers of the Law School of Harvard University, Thorfinn Hoeganes of the Department of Chemistry, and Herman Feiner of the Department of Political Science, both of the University of Chicago. This week's Roundtable pamphlet includes the full text of today's discussion, excerpts from the recent UN debates on the atomic energy control, including the important speeches by American delegate Austin and Russian delegate Vyshinsky, and summaries of the United States and Russian proposals for international control. You'll want to receive this pamphlet and to read these important supplementary materials on the problem of the control and development of atomic energy. Be sure to write for your copy and send 10 cents in coin with your order to the University of Chicago Roundtable, Chicago 37, Illinois. For $3, you may subscribe to the pamphlet for a full year and receive 52 weekly issues. I'll repeat the address, the University of Chicago Roundtable, Chicago 37, Illinois. Next week, the Roundtable will present 5 distinguished delegates from the Second International Symposium on Feelings and Emotions in a discussion of emotions and world problems.